Welcome to Off the Cut, episode 107. Thought I'd change it up a little bit. Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. Quickly, we want to remind you, as always, that the worst podcast available on Apple and Spotify is, in fact, the Green Suitors podcast. But the best place to buy woodworking tools is KM Tools.
That's right. The tool daddy himself and his homemade tools. Sorry. I'm really tired today. I think this is going to be a rough podcast for me.
And with that, the sponsorship is officially over. But KM Tools is unlike a lot of other tool companies because all the tools they have are made for woodworkers by woodworkers. So if it's in their store, it's in their shop. And all, this is a train wreck already.
This is bad. We're off to a rough start tonight, ladies and gents. Well, the best part about KM Tools is that a portion of all sales go to the KM Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund. Oh, damn. Yeah, did I say that right? Yeah, okay. We're going to have to... Jonathan's going to want a refund on this ad read.
Yeah, well, I'll pick you up. So,
okay, please.
So a portion of all their sales, all their proceeds goes directly towards the Katzmosis Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund. So they get the tools and resources into the hands of folks who need it most. And not only is KM Tools supporting the podcast, they're also supporting you every single month by giving away a $50 gift card to KM Tools so you can pick up sweet stuff like the brand new box joint jig, the router plane. What's his new one that he hasn't put out yet? The jig square.
The jig square. There we go. Yeah. Yes.
It's not out yet, but it will be coming out. So you could save that up, get yourself a jig square. All you have to do to sign up for that $50 gift card drawing is join us over on patreon.com/offthecutpodcast, and you are automatically entered to win, in addition to unlocking the after show and tons of other perks.
And the Discord.
Yeah. But so I guess first things first, I mean, this is not trying to promote people to get on Patreon. Last week, so we had a long main show. It was like an hour 15, hour and a half.
And a long after show, too.
Our after show was almost 2 hours long. If you were engaged in the conversation that we were having about product development and everything last week, check out that after show. I think it's going to be super valuable.
Yes.
But
it's a good one.
We also last week, because we always do this, we get way too involved in the conversation when we have guests that we always neglect to name off our patrons. So patrons, don't get upset by that. It's the fact that we're having good conversation. I'm not trying to derail things.
Yeah.
And you know what? We've got five new patrons.
I was trying to count real quick before I had it pulled up on my screen here. I was counting four, so I'm missing one.
Yeah. Unlike
that's a lot of new patrons. That's crazy.
I know. Unlike the Green Suitors, we actually get new patrons because we deliver people value and entertainment. So new this week, we've got Jack, which could perhaps be Agent Jack Bauer.
Could be. Jack,
trying to stay off the grid.
I mean, he's got a very low profile name. If I was Jack Bauer, I would not put my last name.
We've also got 309 Whiskey Wood Shop, which we want to go on the record and state that we do not condone drinking while we're woodworking.
But we do accept bribes.
But we definitely accept bribes, especially if it's in the form of 309 bottles of whiskey. So just make sure that check into the legalities of sending those to Canada for Zach so he doesn't get in trouble. We've also got our buddy John at Biscuit Tree Woodworks, who we had the pleasure with hanging out with, having dinner. Thanks, John. Yep. What a gentleman.
Yep.
We've got Nick Daniel, guy with two first names. Don't know how much I trust that, but he became a patron, so it can't be too bad.
He's a smart guy. He's a cool guy. Yeah.
We've also got Mike Leiden, which we got to hang out with at Workbench Con. That's right. He paid for the whole damn year.
He did.
Up front? Yeah. What a madman.
Right.
Like, Mike, you're crazy.
Yeah, he's a Green Series convert, too.
I know. Yeah. I'll have to text Jason Bent and see who he's paying more money.
Oh, well, we'll text those guys and see if he canceled his Green Suiters membership in order to be too funny. The
cut one. And of course, we want to thank our returning top tier patrons. We've got Joe Welsh, Delaware Valley Woodshop, Renee, aka the Goblin Spanker. Mm-hmm. Dan Armendariz, Josh at Freedom Workshop, Corey Duvall, and Dadu.
Hell yeah. What a crew. Well,
with all the... So everybody, seriously, thanks so much for supporting the show. This is not free to do, despite popular belief. So we really appreciate you supporting the show and making all of this possible, because if it weren't for everyone listening and supporting the show, we would not be 107 episodes in.
That's 100% accurate.
Well, with all the admin stuff out of the way.
Yeah.
Zach, what have you been up to, man?
Oh, man. Well, okay. So first of all, I feel like I should clarify for the audience. My brain is very frazzled because last night I had one of those nights where I just couldn't get to sleep.
Yeah.
It was 3 a.m. in the morning. I was looking at the clock. I was like, why am I not tired? And then I had an early morning. I was up at 6:30 this morning. So I think total, I got like 3 hours of sleep. So if I sound very out of it, it's because I am. What am I working on? Well, I'm working on a couple projects right now. I have one very involved 3D printing project that I'm doing. Ooh. It's probably my most elaborate 3D printing project. I want to make, we've talked about this before, you have your direct attached storage. I have my NAS, my network attached storage. So I want to make my own custom NAS from the ground up. So I'm trying to 3D print a whole case for this. And I'm printing right at the limit of what my 3D printer can do size-wise. So I'm actually breaking it up into pieces. But
using the K1 Max?
No, I'm using my Bamboo Lab X1. I have the K1 Max. I put that in the shop.
Okay.
Because I don't need it that often. So I've just been using my Bamboo X1s. Okay. But I killed one of my X1s. So I'm down.
Tell me about that.
So basically, I guess the extruder, or not the extruder, the hot end got clogged up with a filament, and then it started backing up into it. So basically the heating element, the thermistor, which tells the machine how hot the hot end is, so it can control its temperature, that all got clogged up with melted plastic. So it's a simple enough fix. I just got to replace the hot end, which is like a $30 part. So it's not that big a deal or anything like that, but I have to wait for it to come in the mail.
I thought you're going to have to replace the hot end. So for anybody who doesn't know 3D printers, the hot end is effectively like a thin metal tube. Think of it as like a pencil tip. I thought you're going to have to replace that. The extruder, which is basically the gears that pull the filament in.
Yes.
And so, like some of the fans around it.
I believe the extruder is fine. Fingers crossed, hopefully. I did probably overload it because it was trying to push filament out, but it wasn't able to because it was so clogged up at the tip. So it was probably running for a while. Hopefully it's not damaged. But I will have to replace the hot end. But the fans and everything I'm able to salvage and just transplant onto the new one. So,
interesting.
This is the first time I've had any of my 3D printers like actually give me any sort of issue. So it's kind of interesting to see what goes into repairing it.
Were you able to diagnose what caused the issue?
No, I don't know. It was like in the middle of a print and it just kind of stopped printing and I left it for a while. Like it didn't really register that it had an error. So it just kept trying to move for a while. By the time I found it, there was about a 1-inch gap between where the head was and where the actual plastic was. So meaning it probably went for like an hour or so trying to print this part while it was completely clogged up and able to push out any filament. So Yeah.
That's so weird. But isn't that a thing that kind of happens? Like eventually the hot ends get like worn out, and it's a consumable part.
It is a consumable part. And it also depends what type of filament you're printing. So a lot of the softer filaments are not that big a deal. But if you were printing filaments with aggregates in them, so I like to use a lot of like carbon fiber reinforced filaments.
Okay.
Those carbon fiber bits that are crushed up in the filament are quite abrasive on the head. It's basically like running like liquid sandpaper through a nozzle all the time. So that it slowly gets, you know, worn out. It gets roughed up, so it's more likely to hold on to crud. So, yeah, I think it is probably, you know, I probably have thousands of hours of printing on that printer. So it was probably due for a nozzle change anyways.
If I'm not mistaken, why did I keep getting this stupid ass thumbs up thing that comes up? My hand down here?
Yeah, it's because the way you're resting your hand.
Yeah. There it is again. If I'm not mistaken, don't they make like abrasive resistant hot ends that are a lot more expensive, yes, but they're more like durable?
They're actually not that much more expensive. So I have two. I have stainless steel, which is the softer one, believe it or not. And then I have hardened steel, which is, as the name might imply, the harder one. And I basically always run the hardened steel one because, I mean, it's like, I think they're like $2 more for the hot ends. So it's like, yeah, it's like, why wouldn't you? I don't really, I'm not sure why the stainless steel ones exist. I'm probably exposing a little bit of my own ignorance there. I'm sure there's a filament where the stainless steel one is the one to go with, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you're printing an entire enclosure for this. How many drive bays are you going to have?
So this is it here. This is like one of my early rough prototypes. So I should be able to get 8 drives in there.
Okay.
So you see so down low is the computer and then the power supply. And then up top here, you can kind of see these tracks here.
Yeah.
That's where the drives are going to go. So there'll be 8 drives in there. And then there's another one of these tracks that goes up top as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's sweet though. Like, I think that'll be a really interesting project. And then how much total storage are you going to put in it?
So it'll be 80 terabytes by the time it's done, but 2 drives will be for redundancy. So I'll have 60 accessible.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Nice.
And my plan is to hopefully wrap this thing in a wood veneer so I'm going to print the shell, and there's going to be a front and a rear piece that kind of screw onto it. But this mid frame here, I'm going to try and wrap in walnut.
Are you going to try to do like a pressure sensitive, one of those like PSA veneers that's like super, super thin?
So I was talking to Scott Walsh about this at Workbench about how to do this. So what I'm thinking to do is, I'm going to get I have a bunch of wood veneer that I use for speaker builds. I'm going to put it in a pot of boiling water. Then I'm going to put it in a vacuum bag around this mid frame. And then I'm going to pull all the air out of it and suck it down onto it, I think.
So I think that'll work. My only concern is the vacuum bag crushing the plastic enclosure. Are you going to have to put in some sort of like support membrane inside?
Yeah. So what I'm thinking to do is to cut some plywood cross section. Yeah. Scaffolding almost that I put in it. And actually, truth be told, probably I'll have a couple of these. Like, I'll probably print one that's like solid just specifically for the vacuum forming process. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Cause I'll do it without any adhesive at first. I'll just have it wet and then I'll vacuum form it to it, let it dry, take it apart, and then hopefully it'll more or less retain the shape. Then I'll go back with glue and try and glue it in place. It's going to be a little
tricky. That's a smart move. Cause how what's the radius on those corners? Like a 2-inch radius? Like, I don't think it's.
Yeah. I think it's 1.5 inches.
It's
not super tight, but it's, you know, it's tight enough. I might adjust those. We'll see. But again, I'm kind of running at the limit of my 3D printer, so I can't get much bigger than what I already have. And it's tight in there with all the components. I'm like squeezing every little millimeter I can to get things in there.
Well, you know, if it fails, you have to show it. People love to see you fail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, well, if you, definitely.
If you implode the whole thing like a submarine. Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'm going to try and figure it out so that I hopefully don't kill it. But yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of troubleshooting on this one.
So what kind of adhesive are you going to be able to use between wood and plastic? Do you have to use epoxy?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm kind of open to suggestions. I think epoxy, it's going to get in like the pores of the wood and kind of F it up a little bit, though, don't you think? Like, you always get like staining and blotching with epoxy.
Yeah, I saw somebody doing a glue joint, and they waxed the wood in the areas that they didn't want the glue to adhere to, and then glued it together and then wiped off the wax, and the glue didn't stick to those spots. So I don't know how effective that would be. I've never done that in practice, but it seemed like a good idea.
Yeah, it's
not a bad idea.
I was thinking to use contact adhesive, because that's what I used when I was veneering speakers in the past. You kind of
That's sides. True. It should work.
But it's tricky because contact adhesive is like, it's contact adhesive. It's like right there in the name. As soon as it touches, it basically bonds. So you can't. You had to get your like alignment pretty close to perfect.
Right.
What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna wrap it with like excess on either side and then just trim off the excess. And then there's like a cap that goes on either end that'll cap the rough edges, so you won't like theoretically, you know, I'll have a little bit of margin for error.
Right. Yeah. The only thing, if you use contact cement, is when you're putting it in, if you have any like bubbles or gaps or whatever, you're not really going to be able to work that out. And then if you vacuum form it, you're going to crack it.
I know. So it's definitely very risky. I'm very accepting of the fact that this is going to be a very trial and error project. Like, there's going to be a few iterations of this, I think, to get it right.
See, I'm leaning towards epoxy for it.
Yeah.
But then you're going to have to like rough up the plastic, because I don't know how well the epoxy is going to adhere to the plastic.
I think it would probably adhere pretty well. I'm thinking to use I'm going to use one of my carbon fiber reinforced plastics for it. And those have a very rough texture by their nature.
Okay.
So I'll probably do some tests. But for something like that, what type of epoxy would you recommend?
I'd probably use the Total Boat like high performance stuff. Yeah. Dixo, I think, will set up too quick.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
I mean, you don't need to use like a deep pour epoxy that's gonna be super thin, because that's gonna like bleed through the wood. I would use do you use the Total Boat, or you use the West Systems, or
I've used a lot of Ecopoxy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Their flow cast is like their real, real stuff that you get like liters and liters of, and you can pour like 2 inches thick, right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I could do that. And then I have like 3 days of working time. I was thinking to use, I also have a couple gallons of their, what's it called? Oh, they have some dumb name for it. It's like epoxy 46 or something like that, but it's specifically made for lamination.
I would try that. Because the problem with some of those epoxies, if you pour it too thin, it doesn't set up correctly. Or if you pour it too thick, it doesn't set up correctly. And the other thing is, if you're going to be pulling this under vacuum for an extended period of time, I don't know what the limit is on how long you can be running a vacuum. So like, let's just say you use the FlowCast stuff that needs like a week to cure. Can you pull a vacuum for a week?
Yeah, probably not. I'm assuming you're going to have some small, unless it's a really good vacuum bag. Oh, you got the thumbs up again. unless it's a really good vacuum bag, you're probably going to have like a little pinhole leak that's eventually going to let air in, right?
Yeah. And I've never done any vacuum forming. So like, as soon as you pull the vacuum, do you let keep it running, or does it like node every like hour or so just to like reactivate, or like how does that work?
a lot of the, so I'm thinking she's a vacuum bag, and a lot of them just, you get like a bag that's got a nipple that you hook a pump up to, and then the you just pump it yourself. Yeah.
Oh, like a hand pump.
Yeah, yeah. Not an electric one or anything like that.
Suman said a normal motor can't suck for that long, but Eric can. That's good, Suman. But see, but and that's what you used to do your skateboards, right? You did like the hand pump.
Yeah, yeah. And that worked well. And that actually, now that I think about it, I did leave that for a day and it didn't break the seal. But that was also like a specially designed bag for doing skateboards.
It's that super thick plastic stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to get into laminating or like laminating, vacuum forming, stuff like that. I've just never
done it. I keep seeing people do like steam bending projects, and I was like, I want to try something like that. So this is kind of my trick. And actually, Derek brought this up in the Discord. I'm going to have to be careful what plastic I use, because not only are the components inside this thing going to get kind of hot, and some of the plastics will get softer as they heat up. So you can, like, you know, this thing is basically a big box. It could kind of fold in on itself. So I have to be careful about which plastics I use. And I'm also going to try and design it so it's got ridges that make it a little bit more stable and strong in certain places. But I'm also worried about this. I'm going to take veneer from a tub of boiling water and put it in this bag. It's going to be pretty hot when I do that. So I'm also thinking about that heat too.
And I'm also concerned about the, let's say you use contact adhesive to apply the veneer to the outside of the plastic. To my knowledge, contact adhesive does not withstand any level of increased heat. I thought as soon as it warms up, it becomes tacky again.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
I could be completely wrong.
That I'm not so worried about, because again, I'm going to do this in two stages, right?
Okay.
I'm going to do like, oh, but you're worried about like when it gets like hot from being used. I don't think it's going to get that hot, but that's interesting.
So here's a question.
Touch my server.
What if you, I'm going to flip this around. I'm going to ask a question and kind of flip this around on you. What if you build your wood box, right? Build that, get it complete, laminated and formed the way you want it, and then print your internal casing in pieces and assemble it inside the wood box.
Yeah, that's an idea too. I mean, I didn't really show it very well, but this piece is modular. Like, it's all the internal components kind of slot into position inside of it. Mm-hmm. I could essentially just print that exterior shell and wrap that in wood and then build everything inside. Like, obviously I'm not going to put it with the hard drives and stuff in the vacuum bag and stuff like that.
Oh, no. Right. I meant everything, like all of your plastic shell, all of it, like assemble that in pieces inside the one veneer after it's completely done. So maybe you make like a wood form to build your wood veneer around.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Finalize that and then put it all together like Lego inside the wood form.
Yeah. Yeah. That would work. It would probably make it a bit bigger. But I wonder. I could almost make it. What I could do is like make it out of a, I could make like a wood box that is the exact same size as my 3D printed parts and pull the vacuum on that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Throw in your X card or whatever. Do like a big old block of MDF or something.
Yeah. Maybe that's the way to go.
I mean, it would take you a while to build that up, right? You'd have to do several carves and then kind of stack those carves on top of one another because your bits only got like 2 inches of travel.
Yeah, I could do like a piece of MDF and then like a 2x4 piece of MDF, a 2x4.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think I'd probably be able to pull it over that. Although, you might get like, I don't, yeah.
Well, you do your first layer of MDF and then you do your next one just slightly bigger, glue those together, and then do the router trick where it templates to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, trim it and just keep layering it like that.
Yeah, that's true. Could do that.
You got a lot to think about, Zach.
I know. It's fun because it's a little bit of a how the heck am I going to build this thing?
But are you like me? Where that is the most fun?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's intimidating because you don't know how it's going to go, right?
Right.
It is fun to figure it out, but it's also like, damn, I don't know if this project is going to work. Like, am I going to actually be able to pull this thing off? Which is an exciting place to be operating.
But here's the thing, though. Like, with what we do as a job, like, failure absolutely is an option. In fact, it's a great option.
You have done that, haven't you? Uh-huh. You've put out a video where I don't know that I would ever be able to just leave it at, it didn't work. I think I would have to keep banging my head on it until I got to the point where it worked.
Yeah, yeah. But it's something that you need a resolution. Time restriction too.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. If you don't have like a sponsor breathing down your neck for like a release date, it's like, just keep plugging away on it.
Yeah. But I mean, that's that table that I messed up is one that I'm revisiting at some point. The slab has already been made. I'm just waiting for Miranda to want to go outside and carve it. But
you've had that done for a little while, haven't you?
Oh man. Like 6 or 8 months probably.
Not to poke away at your relationship or anything.
No.
Like you're gonna move it to the new house where you finish it.
Oh, I know. I was like, I mean, it's done. She's like, yeah, it's cold outside though. I get it. That's fair.
Yeah.
I work out there all the time. I know it sucks when it's cold.
Yeah.
I want to hear about your other project, but I have to interrupt and tell you, I found this at the store the other day.
I was going to say, what is that? I see the Bubbly logo, but I've never seen Burst before.
It's called Bubbly Burst. So for everybody at home, it's like a really thin, like a soda pop, like plastic bottle, but it's like really thin and tall. It's called Bubbly Burst Sparkling Water Beverage. This is watermelon lime. And let me tell you, it's incredible.
Okay. Is it sweet? It looks sweet.
I would say it's slightly sweeter. It's got a...
It looks more flavorful than a normal bubbly.
Looks like a 1 liter.
Yeah, it's got sucralose in it, so it definitely has a sweeter flavor. It's not like a sparkling water. That's why it's called sparkling water beverage. But if you find these in the store, give it a whirl. 5 calories. Okay. Not bad. Ooh. Yeah, so.
Let me see if they sell them in Canada. Does it have, like, anything else in it? Does it have, you're not a caffeine guy, so there's probably no caffeine in it or anything. It looks almost like a energy drink.
No, it's carbonated water, lime juice, natural flavor, citric acid, potassium, benzoate, acesulfame, potassium, sucralose, zinc, gluconate, calcium, and a bunch of other things I can't pronounce. So it definitely has more ingredients than the typical sparkling water. But
I see it on the store shelf, I'll grab one. This is going to be one of those annoying things where it won't come to Canada, though.
Well, I told you specifically Columbus is a test market, so I don't even know if it's out everywhere.
Yeah. Well, patrons, write us and let us know if you see it at your local shelves.
But anyway, you said you were working on two projects, right?
Yeah, so the other project I'm working on is a custom Nintendo Switch, because I did one of those about a year ago, and I think it's up to 1 million views at this point. So, you know the age-old rule of making YouTube videos. If something goes well, you keep iterating on it.
What was Brad Rodriguez's saying? Like, if something works well, you just beat it and suck all the life out of it or something?
Yeah, something like that. He was like, you wrap your hands around its neck and squeeze the life out of it or something like that. It was really graphic.
I get it, though.
Yeah. So right now, I'm at a standstill on that project, too, because I'm trying to cram 2 batteries inside the Nintendo Switch and double its battery life.
Mm-hmm.
But there's very limited space. Like, here, I actually have it here. You can see a Nintendo Switch is like, I don't know, 3/8 of an inch thick or something like that. So
not quite a half.
Yeah. I found these batteries from a defunct Chinese cell phone manufacturer. And they
BlackBerry?
No, No, that's a Canadian cell phone manufacturer.
Too soon?
Yeah, too soon. And these batteries are the perfect shape. I can just get two of them into the battery bay on the Nintendo Switch, and it would give me like 60% more battery life.
Oh.
Here's the problem. Here's the catch. Here's the but. These batteries, because they're from a defunct company, are 7 years old. They have been sitting on a shelf for 7 years.
No.
And lithium ion batteries do not like to be sat on a shelf, especially if they
stated capacity versus actual capacity.
Yes. So what I did was I bought six of these batteries and I was like, I'll test them. So I've actually been learning a hell of a lot about lithium ion batteries.
Okay.
So I have this, I figured out how to charge a battery with no charger. With
just I'm like genuinely that. Interested. So tell me more about them.
Okay, I don't even know where to start on this. So the very first thing I do when I get these batteries is I chop off their battery management PCB. So there's basically every battery, there's a little circuit board on it that keeps it from being overcharged, it keeps it from over-discharging itself, and it regulates the heat of the battery pack.
Okay.
The ones that come on it are set up for a cell phone, so they don't let you really monkey with the batteries. So the first thing I do is cut those off and solder on a couple of generic ones so that I can start messing with it. From there, I hook it up to this this gizmo that basically it just connects the battery to a heater and it runs the heater at 2 amps and 4 volts and basically runs down the battery. And as it's doing that, it times itself and then it knows what the capacity of the battery is.
Oh, okay.
So basically I got all the batteries, ran them through that test to see how, you know, what their capacity still is after sitting on the shelf for so long. And come to find out, two of them are like, okay, I'm getting like 75% of their stated capacity out of them.
Okay.
And the other four are basically just dead. But that those two with 75% capacity, it's not really going to be that much of an upgrade. So now I'm trying to order more of these batteries. I'm just going to keep buying. They're really cheap. They're like $5 each. So I'm going to
I was going to say, are you returning the ones that don't?
No, because I've like cut them up and I soldered on them and stuff. There's no way I can send them back.
That's fair.
Yeah. So I just keep buying them and I'm going to keep buying them until I find some good ones, like some golden samples that have somehow stood the test of time. But the other cool thing is yeah, exactly. I had to charge these batteries. So I was like, how the heck am I going to charge these batteries when I don't have, you know, like I can't just connect them to a phone and plug it in, right?
Right. You don't have the device, right?
Yeah. So I got this desktop PSU and it's basically like, it's just two electrodes, a positive and a negative, and you can control the current and the voltage that runs between them. So basically... Okay. The way you charge a lithium ion battery is just by connecting a positive terminal to the positive terminal, negative terminal to the negative terminal, and then setting the voltage at a very specific amount and pushing current through it.
Huh.
And at a certain point, it'll get up to... So it starts with the voltage below its maximum rate of voltage. And as you charge it, that voltage slowly raises. And then once you hit your cutoff, then you see the current start to drop. And eventually your current, when the battery is fully charged, your current will just go down to zero. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just been really interesting learning more about how batteries work. And I got to give Scott another shout out because Scott is, I believe, an electrical engineer. That's what he was going to school for. Yep. So I've just been texting him all week like, hey, dude, like, how does this work? Like, how can I charge this battery? How does, you know... How do you, I don't know, all these different like little electrical engineering questions. I keep pestering him with questions.
Isn't that cool though, that like this community is like, you know, Scott is and has a channel that's equally, if not more successful than ours. And it's just like, he's not just like, F you, Zach, I'm not helping. It's just like, let me, please, I would love to help. Like, I think that's so cool that like we have that amongst everyone, right?
Yeah.
It's sweet. So that project is going, you're at a standstill because you're just trying to get more batteries, you said?
I keep buying these batteries and I buy them from China. So they take like 2 weeks to show up every time I order more. The first round, I ordered three, and I was like, oh, for sure, like, one will be bad, and the two will be good, and it'll be fine. And then I was like, oh, crap, only one of them works. So I was like, okay, I'll order another three. For sure, that'll be fine.
You should just order, like, 15 of them.
I know, I should, I should.
I mean, because you're paying shipping, too, aren't you?
And you know, import tax, too. When you buy things from AliExpress, the shipping is always like 99 cents or something like that. Yeah. So I'm not too worried about it. It's more the time than anything.
But you can always click the, like, it never showed up or whatever. And that they just give you your money.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
I don't really. I don't know how that website works. But no, that sounds cool, though. I'm excited to see how both of those work, especially now knowing the behind the scenes fact of like the you ordered all these batteries, had to hack them apart, and you're like, oh, these are dead.
Yeah, and there were challenges along the way too. Like the batteries have aluminum tabs for like the terminals on them are made out of aluminum, I think, or maybe it's nickel. I can't remember. Either way, normal solder wouldn't work, so I had to get like special solder.
That's what I was going to say.
In order to make it doesn't work. Stick. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I was like trying to solder the connections, and the solder would just slide off. I was like, "What's going on here?" So, yeah, all these little things I had to learn along the way.
So is this why you couldn't sleep last night? You're too busy thinking about all this stuff?
No, this I've been plugging away at this for like a month now. I started this project before Workbench, like long before Workbench.
Hey, it sounds like you're taking a play out of my book.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But you've been busy, though. I'm glad to hear it.
We've been busy, yeah. But enough about me. What's on your workbench?
So I started this... Oh, hold on, my screen's coming unplugged.
Uh-oh.
There we go. Now, the HDMI port on this laptop is not super tight. So, like, I put it in, and it just kind of, like, wiggles itself out. It doesn't have, like, a snap feature. But
interesting.
So I got... Hold on.
No.
There it is. So ArborTech sent me this. It's called the Turbo Scraper.
That looks scary.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I said.
What do you put that on? An angle grinder?
Angle grinder. I can't open
it. Oh, my God.
But so what it is it's like ArborTech makes like a ton of, power carving stuff. You need one to open it.
Yeah.
No kidding. I can't even. I'm trying to open it with a pen.
New turbo scraper.
Oh, I was trying to open it with a pen, and I'm like, you know what's going to happen, especially because I'm on the podcast? I'm going to crack the pen. There's just going to be ink flying all over the place. But
yeah.
It's a disc that goes on the angle grinder, and it's got God, they got so much crap inside this thing. Good Lord! One,
look at that literature.
One, two, three, four pieces of literature inside the damn package. My God. Okay, here it is. Stickers? Oh, it looks cool. It looks like this. It's a disc that goes on the angle grinder, and then it has a bunch of little carbide inserts on the edges. And so obviously it spins and stuff, and you can carve kind of stuff into it. So it got me thinking, I have not done any power carving projects in a while.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun. And we always talk about this, that like the best thing you can do to keep yourself from getting burned out is do stuff that you're genuinely excited in doing. Because it also transfers to the audience. Like, they can tell that you're excited. So I was like, okay.
Agreed.
I want to do some power carving. And then I started, for whatever reason, was just looking on Wayfair, right? Mm-hmm. Now, hear me out. I do not buy furniture on Wayfair. But they have some interesting designs for stuff every once in a while.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, I agree. It's
usually just absolute crap furniture.
But
you can draw some inspirations from this stuff. So let me see if I can share my screen. Share screen, window, entire screen, screen one, share. Look at me.
Uh-oh, questions for the podcast.
So I saw this table here. So basically how I would describe this to people who aren't watching YouTube is it's like, if you took a standard box and then you grab the top and you grab the bottom and then you twisted your wrists. So it kind of makes the sides of the box like do this like spinny swirl thing going on. Yeah. And I was like, that's pretty neat. And then I also saw this one, which The way I would describe this to people is it's like a bunch of 45 degree angled pieces that are met up with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And also almost kind of like a DNA helix type scenario.
Yeah.
And it kind of got me thinking. I was like, that would be neat to kind of morph the two of those ideas together make something neat and do some power carving. So I kind of modeled up my thoughts in Fusion.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm obviously it's like real thick lumber and whatnot. And I'm going to power carve it. Do you know how difficult it is to like get these angles to work and stuff? You're thinking, oh, these pieces meet together at what appears to be a 90 degree angle. So the miter between them is 45 degrees.
Yeah.
No, because it's because the piece is leaning and then also being mitered, it comes out to these just absolutely ridiculous like angles and stuff like that. So it was really challenging to figure out.
So this is going to be a horrible podcast for all the people at home. But how many pieces do you figure this thing is going to be? So there's the top and the bottom. And then is there four legs, kind of?
Yes, there are four legs. So for people at home, that's basically there are two legs, but each leg is like, you know, mitered in half or something. So there are six
at an angle. Pieces.
And at an angle, It's going to be a bananas geometry thing when I cut all these together. But
this is one of those things that without Fusion, I would never attempt to do this. But having seen it now modeled up in Fusion, it's like, okay, it's like relatively simple. Like, I think I could do that. And those are the
this
two.
Is what the actual piece will look like. It'll have.
Gotcha.
A miter on each end and then a miter in the middle. Yep. I don't think it'll be too challenging to actually cut.
No, it's not too bad.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I got thinking on it and I was like, I'm interested in that, which is kind of why I wanted to go about it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
So here's my question. Mm-hmm. I guess I got to go back to sharing my screen. Share screen, entire screen one. So how am I going to join? Well, I can't. Sometimes Fusion won't let me do the thing. No, how am I going to join it to the top for wood movement? Do I have to basically make sure that the... What?
Dominoes, baby.
Well, no, I know that. But do I have to make sure that the grain of the panel matches up with the grain on the top, and then basically the bottom panel has to be a 90-degree rotation.
I think if you could pull off that miter edge and do a wrap like that, that would be incredible.
Worried about. I know that whatever I do, everyone's because there's so much going on with this project.
Yeah,
I'm not signing off their email list. There's so much going on with this project. I don't think it's going to go perfect. It's more of exploration of ideas.
Are you hoping that you can waterfall the grain pattern and have it continuous from the top to the leg?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that would be super sick if I could.
It would be. I'm trying to even think like how you would do that. I guess you would just have to know which. Because, okay, so those two pieces, the two legs or the four legs, is the width of those two, like, so is the width of those two pieces added together the same as the width of the top of the table?
So now you're getting into geometry issues.
Yeah.
So, no.
I mean, let's.
Can't be.
Okay, so
because then the pieces would run into each other as they're like twisting up.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
So that's why I don't think I'm going to like wrap the grain around. I think that'll be a conquest that's too challenging.
Yeah. Could you even like invert that paradigm then and do two different materials?
Maple on the top,
yeah, like in the middle. Yeah, to contrasting woods or something like that, or
I could, but that would require another trip to the lumberyard.
Screw it then.
No, that's interesting because I know you've done that with like with some of those like pixelated-y looking tables, and the walnut and the maple looks pretty neat together.
Yeah, yeah, and because the walnut and the maple are, if you use soft maple, it's very similar in terms of hardness or density. So they move at a very similar rate. So I haven't, like, my table downstairs I've had through a few seasons now, and it hasn't had any movement issues with the walnut and the maple joining together.
Or what if the legs, how they kind of meet together at a 90, what if I had one side of the leg maple, one side walnut or something like that? Or do you think the top would... Because I want to do most of the carving in the leg structure portion.
Yeah.
So it might kind of make it look interesting having it transition.
Yeah. Colors.
I don't know.
Can you go back to it? How are you going to carve it? Because the one you showed is actually, it's like a very geometric shape. It doesn't, I'm not seeing how you would, how carving would fit into that.
So share the screen again. You talking about like my Fusion model?
Yeah, yeah, the Fusion is like square edges and stuff, isn't it?
Yes, but this is modeled, what's hard to tell in Fusion is this is actually 1.5 inch thick lumber.
Uh-huh.
So I can like really carve into this stuff to get it kind of like flowing. I just needed for my brain to see the rough geometry or the hard geometry to get everything to fit. So I'm basically going to glue it up in this like, you know, real rigid geometry and then carve it once it's constructed. Right.
Gotcha. Now here's another crazy idea for you. What if you called up our good buddy Vic and said, "Hey Vic, I need a stump."
I thought about it, dude. I had thought about it.
And then you really carve it.
Yeah. I had thought about that as well. That'll be something I do in the future. Cause I, dude, if you haven't done power carving, it is a
freaking blast. I'd love to try it. You know it's who I so really liked? I don't remember her name, but her page is Little Bear Furniture. And she used to layer up plywood and then power carve it. And I always thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that is neat. That's neat.
Yeah. But yeah, like get Vic to send you a big stump that's, you know, 12 inches wide by 24 inches high.
Yeah, that might be something I do in the future.
Yeah. Well, then you don't have to worry about... fair. Yeah, that's
a good point. The wood movement and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one solid piece. You don't have to worry about anything at that point.
Yeah. I would be curious with, like, a stump, if you took that much of the guts out of it, what sort of rigidity it has. Yeah.
True, yeah. Yeah, it'd probably move on you pretty good. But maybe like, if you carved away at it slowly, it would kind of do all of its moving slowly as well, and you could kind of fix it.
What if you just like impregnated it with epoxy before you carved it so that the pores were just filled in?
It just literally
how deep could you get it to go?
Soaked it in penetrating epoxy.
Okay. Yeah. So here's what you're going to do. First, you're going to call Vic. Then you're going to call Blake over BM Sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out how to cast the whole thing into a solid block of epoxy.
Then I'm going to get on the phone with Kristen from Total Boat and be like, I need all of your penetrating epoxy that you currently have.
Yeah, exactly.
See, but this is the fun thing about what we do. It's like you can take these just wild ideas. I mean, it's not that wild, but like these.
Kind of wild.
Huh. I wonder if that would work. And we can get paid to do this. Like, that's insane to me still.
I know. Yeah, it's wild.
Huh. But yeah, so I'm working on that. I'm also still trying to work on that wine box for our wedding. It's all of my work is done on it. I'm just waiting until she wants to again go out in the garage do the spot that she wanted to help on. So we haven't gotten on that. And then I've also realized that I need to take a day out of the week where I don't work on the business.
Yeah.
And dude, I did it last Sunday and then I did it this Sunday. Dude, for me, like, mental clarity is so much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just took the whole day. Well, I actually took several hours out of the day helping Keith set up his shop on Shopify. But, nice. Yeah, it was so funny because he was getting so pissed off. Keith, if you're listening, it was funny. He's slamming his fists on the ground. He's sending me all these videos and he's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on here. Just getting so mad.
But it's funny. I have a hard time imagining Keith getting worked up.
Oh, no. Right? Keith gets fired up about stuff. It's funny. You ever heard the story about how he got mad at his sander and threw it across the
No.
Oh, love you, Keith. But yeah, I was helping him with his Shopify store and getting that all set up for him and stuff. Nice. Help mitigating some of his issues. But yeah, dude, it was so nice the past two Sundays to just not do business stuff. Because then I start Monday and I'm like, all right, what are we gonna do? I feel like I have so much more energy and it's something I'm gonna, you know, keep going on.
Yeah, you can't go balls to the wall all the time because you just burn yourself out and then you're no good to anybody, right? So just even taking that one day to just let your thoughts percolate and settle and, you know, give yourself a little room to breathe. You're much more efficient the other 6 days when you actually do hit it.
Right. And I know we kind of had that conversation at Workbench, Con. I was like, dude, sometimes I just feel like burnt out. And I'm like, is this what I want to be doing?
Yeah.
But then I realized, like, as soon as I take just one day off, I'm like, I cannot wait to start building this next project and like, oh, I'm going to edit this video. I'm going to do this. It's like, okay, so I'm doing what I want to do, but it's unrealistic to imagine that I want to do this 24/7.
Yeah.
365. Yeah. Like everyone wants a break, even from stuff they absolutely love doing.
So exactly.
I'm going to do that.
Variety's the spice of life.
Yeah. So, another thing that happened last week, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this. So I was at the dentist's office, as I do every 6 months.
Yes, you should get veneers.
Veneers. And
I want to be blinded by your teeth every time we do this podcast.
Whoa, what is that? Like Derek Zoolander and Blue Steel. I don't know how you just get that look.
We were talking to Clayton at Workbench Con, and he said he paid somebody to do YouTube thumbnails for him, and he got back a thumbnail from this thumbnail artist, and the guy had replaced his teeth with somebody else's teeth that were way brighter.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, why? Who cares?
To make it pop on the thumbnail, I guess.
Yeah, I guess he's a good-looking dude, though. So, like,
he is. I know.
Can attract the women with those. That makes sense. That makes sense. That's why I don't put my face in thumbnails.
Yeah, me too.
It's like that's gonna deter people even more from wanting to watch my videos.
Turn everybody off. Why would I ever do that?
But anyway, so I was going to the dentist, and this is on Friday or whatever. It doesn't matter what day it was. A day or two before, Miranda's like, oh, yeah, I got a dentist appointment, too. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, yeah, cool, whatever. Then she goes, she looks at me and asks me a question that I had never, ever thought of before in my life. Uh-huh. She goes, so when you're at the dentist and you're, you know, you're lying on that chair and they, you know, they're all up in your business. Mm-hmm. Where do you look?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you look, Zach?
That's a great question. So my dentist has a TV that they pull down in front of you. But,
damn it.
But it's basically impossible to see because it's never really in your eye line. So usually, because I'm a weirdo like this, I'm usually analyzing the construction of the room.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah, I'm like, eh, that's not a great plaster seam in the corner there. Oh, the drop ceiling. They didn't really put the T-track together in that corner. Like, weird stuff like that. I never look at the person.
Okay. First of all, I'm glad you said that because it means that you're not a psychopath.
Yeah, like Suman, who's saying he looks straight in their eyes to assert dominance.
So Miranda asked me this question and I say exactly what you said. I said,
yeah,
well, I look up, but but kind of, you know, off in the distance. And I kind of just like look at the ceiling, how the, you know, oh, that drop, that drops in tile is dirty or whatever.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, 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 no. You need to just close your eyes.
That's and I'm like,
so, but I had never even heard of this, nor thought that this was an option. I'm like, I'm not getting a massage. Why am I closing my eyes?
You're getting the opposite of a massage. It's like low-grade torture.
So, right. So then I'm like, well, I have to Google this. And of all places, the pinnacle of, you know, all thoughts, opinions, and knowledge is, would be from Reddit, right?
Yes, of course.
There is a very high mix of people that close their eyes versus having their eyes open.
Wow.
So I went to the dentist for the first time with my eyes closed. And let me tell you, it was a great experience.
Did you sleep?
No, but it felt like it went faster.
Okay. Okay. And so it was just like, closed your eyes and thought about stuff.
Yeah. I was actually brainstorming my project.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I feel like my phone has rotted my brain and I'd never be able to exist without stimulus for that long.
No. But then, me being the weirdo that I am, as the appointment wraps up and they're like, you know, you get to go or whatever, I looked at the dentist straight in the eyes. I go, I got to ask you a question. And he's thinking, I'm going to ask him like a dental question, right?
Yeah, of course.
And I go, so this is a really awkward question, but I have to ask. And that his whole demeanor completely changed. Like, oh God.
He's probably going into liability mode. Like he's like,
no, not I'm there. Not turned on as you.
Yeah.
I have a twin. But I go, so like, what's the breakdown of people that one have their eyes open and two have their eyes closed? He goes, no one asked that question, but I find it really interesting. Do you guys want to fathom a guess? And this, granted, this is a sample size of one dentist.
I'm going to say 75 eyes open, 25% closed.
Just Eric, what do you think?
Shot in the dark.
Well, what's his ratio of meth addicts as well in his clientele base? Because that might make a difference.
It's a dentist in a nice area.
I'm assuming if Eric's going to this dentist, it's probably there's not that many. I'm going to a meth mouse.
Welcome to meth mouse. Meth mouse dentistry. You take your.
I'm going
to
go with 40-60.
40-60. 40-60. With 60 being 60 closed. 60
closed. Yeah.
Okay. He said that it was. He said it was roughly 50% of the people keep their eyes closed.
Okay.
40% of them keep it open.
Mm-hmm.
And a whopping 10% of people look directly into the eyes of the dentist.
Now that sounds like a nightmare to me. But yeah, I guess there's quite a few. There's 10% of people out there are Simon.
Or absolute psychopaths. Who is going to the dentist and just like, this is a big old wide open, just staring right at him.
Let me ask you this. When you go to your dentist, do they put glasses on you or anything like that?
So I just started going to a new dentist about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And yes, they did. And I thought it was the weirdest thing in the world.
Well, so I started going to new dentists, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and they did the sunglasses thing too. And I was like, it's weird because, you know, they're shining a light in your face that I can see in your mouth, but it's not really that bright. And then I was like, wait a minute, the sunglasses are for the dentist. They're not for me. They're so that the dentist doesn't get distracted by what my eyes are doing. And so that they don't have to like worry about like making inadvertent eye contact with me.
Probably puts you at ease too.
Yeah.
I assumed it was to protect you from all the dental shit it's flying in your mouth.
Flying and maybe.
And the overspray. Sure.
Are they like the world's cheapest sunglasses? Mine are like pipe cleaners with it's not even really a lens. It's just like a piece of plastic threaded onto it.
Oh, yeah. It was, I mean, it's a nightmare at the very least, but Yeah, I don't know. It just got me thinking. So Derek, your eyes closed. Zach, your eyes open, guy.
Eyes open, yeah.
Next time you go, try the eyes closed and report back to me.
Okay. Oh, so my one last thing about dentists, real quick. My friend went to a dentist, and he said that his dentist lets him put in his earbuds and listen to a podcast while he gets his dental work done.
Like Off the Cut?
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. He could be listening to our nasally drones while somebody's grinding away at his teeth with a drill.
Huh.
What could be better?
Okay. I mean, as long as it's not the Green Suitors podcast, available on Apple and Spotify.
No, that's the one you might want to listen to whenever you're, you know, enduring pain. You want to associate pain with pain, right?
I've heard that, like, when people become prisoners of war now, they actually make them listen to Green Suitors podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, the Guantanamo Bay, they just play Green Suitors 24-7. Yeah.
Part of the Marine Corps training is listening to their entire back catalog of episodes. But did I tell you this? That the guys from Green Suitors reached out to me asking for help with their mediocre podcast?
Oh, what advice do you have for them?
They're like, we really want to know what streaming and recording service
use,
because they want to try to poach it from us.
Oh,
these guys. At least they
have an affiliate link.
Trash. Yeah, I'm not helping them, but I did. I told them we use StreamYard.
Yeah,
we don't have a referral code, do we?
There should be one.
I don't think so. Oh, really? Got to get that. Yeah, like,
I think it's in your settings.
Discount is or whatever.
Got to get that dollar return on the referral.
Yeah, maybe we'll get a free month for the referral or something.
I doubt it. Well, I have another topic that I wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. How far are we in? I feel like we went live for... This won't be a long topic. We can do this.
All right, let's do it quick. Show.
Genuine question. So, you guys have all noticed this. Every several years, fashion trends change.
Uh-huh. Right? Uh-huh. You want to talk about how Carhartt is high fashion now?
Yeah, please. Don't get me started. The first question is, at what age does your fashion decisions just freeze for the rest of your life?
Oh, good question. Good question. I have been working myself slowly into this rut of not caring. Like, when I shop for clothes, I walk around the store, and this is partially my autism, but I walk around the store and I just feel fabrics. I'm ooh, that's soft. And then I just buy the soft things.
Right.
I don't even really have much care for what it looks like. It's just, how does it feel on my skin?
Dude, or is it like with pants, you're like, oh, these are stretchy. I got to get these.
Yeah, exactly. It's
at
like,
what point do we just wear sweatpants every single day?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
2 years into a long-term relationship, that's when it gets locked in.
The sweatpants.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how Simon is saying he doesn't give an F, but we all saw his shoe. We saw his shoes at Workbench Con.
You know, Simon has I think he said he brought 3 pairs of the exact same leather shoes to Workbench Con. So we always had a fresh pair.
Yeah. So Simon, please do not fill our live chat with lies.
He's full of it. But
a great question.
It got me thinking. I'm like, man, do I just wear the same thing like every day now? I don't know.
Sophie always gives me crap because I wear jeans all the time.
What are you supposed to wear?
I don't know. I think she wants me to wear more sweatpants and stuff like that, especially around the house. Like, if we're just lounging around the house, I'm almost always wearing jeans.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but she seems to think she thinks I'm not comfortable when I'm wearing my jeans, but I buy the stretchy jeans, so.
I get the same damn response.
Yeah.
Here's what I think it is. I think she wants you to wear sweatpants so that she feels more comfortable wearing whatever she wants to wear. Nothing to do with you, Zach.
Maybe. She doesn't wear jeans around the house, though, so.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But so I guess what got me into this debacle here was I was putting on socks
Uh-huh.
And it started to make me think, man, throughout my whole life, there's been this ebb and flow of socks. At one age, you wanted to have the absolute lowest cut socks in the world so nobody saw you were wearing socks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the high socks came in. And then the low cut socks came back.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't even, like, what socks am I supposed to wear?
Great question. I have no idea.
Whenever you like.
If I'm wearing pants, then I wear tall socks. And if I'm wearing shorts, then I wear ankle socks. But I don't do like the crazy ankle socks where it's like, even if somebody has like a low cut shoe, you can't see that they're wearing socks. Yeah. Like it's literally just a slip that covers the bottom.
Looks of their like foot. A boat that you'd serve French fries in.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't own any of those.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Cause you're a civilized human.
Yeah. Well, with socks, you wear knee-high black. We wear knee-high black socks with shorts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the fashion trend.
You know what I did? You know how everybody has like two or three pairs of socks in their sock drawer that you're like, oh, not this pair again. And that's how you know it's time to do laundry.
Yeah.
Did you get rid of them? I threw out all the socks that I have one pair of tall socks and one pair of short socks. And, you know, like a... I shouldn't say one pair. I have like a dozen, style. But I just have one type.
One skew.
That's what I do.
Yeah, one skew, exactly.
I go through once a year and I buy all new socks of the same type.
Yes.
And just replace everything all at once and then wear them.
Smart man.
Yeah,
great. Same thing with boxers.
Cost me like $34 and it was the best thing I ever did.
Yeah. But all this sock thinking, I'm like, man, do I go to the gym like, if you know, wearing shorts, and then if I have low socks, or like all these people like looking at me like, oh, look at this old man, or if I'm wearing like the high, like just below the calf socks, or people looking at me like, oh, look at this old man, like how do I stay hip on the sock game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real trick to fashion is not caring what the trends is. You are the trendsetter, Eric.
Yeah.
That's right.
But at what point do you become, he's dressing like a dad. You know, I'm 31. I'm trying to stay hip.
Yeah.
You gotta get yourself the ice cream scoop haircut. That'll make you hip.
Ice cream scoop haircut. What you gotta do is you gotta hire yourself a consultant. You gotta get some like 18-year-old cool dude. I actually was like, you know what? Like I should get some new clothes. And I was like, I don't even know where to go. Like, I don't even know where to shop or where to get inspiration for that type of thing. And then I was like, you know what? Screw it. I don't need to spend the money.
Right. But so this is where the conversation had stemmed from. Miranda's like, as I'm sure you guys always hear this with your partners, I have nothing to wear. All of my stuff is so outdated. And I'm like, I couldn't tell you the last time I went shopping for something.
Yeah. I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of if I'm out and I see something I like, I should just buy it. Yeah. Because I do it all the time. I'm like, Dad, oh, I like that shirt. It's like, I don't need it. And then I'll just walk away. But then, you know, like 6 years later, you're like, oh, I've owned the same clothes for the last 6 years and nothing's changed.
Okay. I'm going to tell you guys something that you 1000% need to buy. And this is for everyone listening. Dress shirts suck. No one likes wearing a dress shirt. Uncomfortable. Yes, they're stiff. You tuck it in and then it gets untucked and it looks like you got a big burlap sack around your waistband and stuff. Okay. I got absolutely hammered with ads on Instagram. I know you thought I was going to say drinking.
Yeah, I thought you got drunk and did some online shopping.
No, with ads on Instagram about these like stretchy dress shirts. And I was like, this is the stupidest thing in the world. And I said, you know what? I don't have a white dress shirt. I know, crazy. I do not have a solid white dress shirt and I need one for the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, whatever. I'm going to buy one of these. It was like $100, which for me, for a dress shirt, is asinine. Like, I'm the cheapest person when it comes to buying clothes. Like, a $20 dress shirt, I'm like, Yeah. With a large. I don't know about that. And so I was like, whatever. I'm just going to buy it. Uh-huh. Dude, I am thrilled to wear dress shirts now. I bought like four of these shirts.
Really? Okay. What's the company?
I've seen several of them. There's like, I think the one that I liked or the one that I got, I should say I didn't order from all these different brands. I only ordered for one. It's called Butter Cloth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, they are super nice.
Butter Goods?
No, it's called Butter Cloth, I think. But I don't. If you guys are in the market for a dress shirt.
Okay.
It's, oh yeah, they're not cheap. But they're some really damn nice shirts.
Because I so rarely do buy clothes, I actually don't really like, you know, $100 on shirts. Like, yeah, it's a lot, but I'm not gonna grow out of it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You're in your mid 30s. You're good.
I will have it for the rest of my life at this point.
When you just get absolutely jacked though, and you're ripping out of it, Zach.
Yeah, true. Sure.
That's what it is. But yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think I need to do a better job of like getting myself quality clothing rather than just like stuff that fits you so poorly. Because I know, Zach, you probably have the same issue as I do. It's like, oh, I need it longer, but now it's like wearing a trash bag.
Exactly. You either are a human kite or you're constantly exposing your navel to people. And those are your two options.
Look like the guy who's trying to wear like one of those skin tight Under Armour shirts that has no muscle. No, that's my
issue. And for some reason, whenever you go with the tall shirts, they're way too long.
Yes. Yeah. There's no, I need just like an extra 2 inches, not an extra 5 inches.
Yeah. Hey,
that's what she said.
That's what she said.
That could be the show title right there. The one where they need 2 inches.
Yeah. There it is right there.
Well, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. We are going to head over to the after show. We got a bunch of questions that we got to answer and going to keep it a little tighter this week in the after show, but
yeah,
it is what it is. So thanks so much for supporting the show. As always, head over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast. Get access to the after show. Enter to win that $50 gift card from KM Tools and tons of other perks.
That's right. And we will see you all next week.
See ya.
See ya.